This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Are the Philadelphia Flyers going to scratch their captain tonight? Is Sean Couturier really getting scratched tonight? It's a big game against Toronto Maple Leafs. The return, John Tortorella is back. Interesting. What do we have here real quick here? So Charlie O'Connor, who of course covers the Philadelphia Flyers, reporting that Sean Couturier, along with Gurianov and Atkinson, so Cam Atkinson, Dennis Gurianov, were the last group of forwards off the ice at the game day skate. And they may be your scratches tonight. Ooh, that's juicy. You know what else is juicy? The Washington Capitals were in a playoff spot, folks. Welcome to the program. The Washington Capitals, let me say that again. Let the gravity of that sink in, folks. The Washington Capitals, by virtue of a 5-2 victory over the Calgary Flames yesterday, are in a playoff spot. Alexander Ovechkin with 2 goals and has now scored 20 goals 19 times. Only the 6th player to do so and the 3rd to do it in 19 straight seasons and the only player to ever do it from the start of the career. The 6 in question, by the way, Gordie Howe, Ron Francis, Brendan Shanahan, Dave Andrechuk, and Jaromir Jagr, in case you're wondering. Caps are hot. We've talked about them a lot lately. 10-4-1 in their last 15. Ovechkin now 51 away from tying Wayne Gretzky for the goal record. He's at 843. The great one is at 894. And I think we should spend a little bit more time talking about Spencer Carberry, who, while all around the Washington Capitals, team seems to be quite happy playing 7-5 games and 8-6 games. And he's got this Washington Capitals team buttoned down. Also, the Buffalo Sabres over the Seattle Kraken 6-2. Jeff Skinner with a hat trick. Buffalo saying, we're not done yet. Now, an interesting question here with the Buffalo Sabres. So they're going back-to-back. They're playing Vancouver later on tonight. Huge game, obviously, for the Buffalo Sabres. The question is, if you're Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who's been fantastic since the calendar flipped, probably the best goaltender in the NHL. I would imagine he wants to go back-to-back, but if that's true, then what's the point in calling up Devon Levi? We'll see who's in net tonight for the Buffalo Sabres. A couple of things for tonight's matchups, and there are a few doozies, including the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New Jersey Devils. 13 games tonight after only 2 yesterday. And coming up on the program here in a couple of moments, Greg Wyshynski, Corey Lavalette stops by on the Carolina Hurricanes, Elliot Friedman checks in from the general manager's meetings in Florida, and Luke Fox on the return match, the Toronto Maple Leafs facing off against the Philadelphia Flyers, and all the news that's fit to read in between. In the meantime, our good friend from ESPN and The Drop is Greg Wyshynski, and he joins me now to kick off the program today. Hello, Wish.
You know, it's not exactly a mystery as to why Sean Couturier was scratched tonight when you look at the last 12 games and realize that at 5-on-5, at a points-per-60 rate, Mark Stahl is outscoring Sean Couturier. Mm-hmm. So
is that bad?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I'm new to hockey, Greg. I'm new to this game. Is that a bad thing? I'm not sure if I get all these references. Who is this Mark Stahl fellow, and why is he a measuring stick?
Well, many consider him to be, the previous generation's answer to Cale Makar, but not exactly known for his offense. No. I mean, this is partially performance, and could be justified by performance, but obviously a classic Tortorella shock to the system moment as he looks at the landscape of the Eastern Conference wildcard race and sees that the Flyers may be in a spot of trouble. Let's talk about these Capitals for a second, Merrick.
Oh, that's where I'm going.
How are they doing this? All right, 26th in expected goals against, 26th in expected goals for, 29th in goals for, 22nd in goals against, 20th in team save percentage, and yet every time I look up, it seems like Lindgren's having a good game. This is one of the most aggressively mid teams that we have in the National Hockey League this season. And I can't understand for the life of me how they've been able to do this. And I can't understand, I mean, outside of the teams in front of them being unable to grab, you know, establish their footing and climb the mountain, the Capitals are such an average to below average team at even strength that I am in utter befuddlement how this has happened.
It is. And we see this in... how do I give this a delicate landing? We see this in corporate culture, the phenomenon of falling upwards. And
tell me
is
more.
Is this not is this not the example of falling upwards? Like, honestly, first of all, you know, kudos to Spencer Carberry. This is all of a sudden a team that's very comfortable playing 2-1 games now, even though Ovechkin continues to produce, even though the goal scoring against and for is clearly down for the Washington Capitals. The thing that I keep coming back to on this one, because I don't disagree with you, and it's a fun story. And by the way, if you look at the remainder of the Washington Capitals season, that's a really hard schedule. Like, someone mentioned to me the other day that it might be the hardest remaining schedule in the entire NHL for any team. Any team. Not just teams in the playoffs or on the ball. For any team. So this is still a very steep hill for the Washington Capitals to climb. So enjoy it while it's here, because it might not be here very much longer. But the one that I keep coming back to is goal differential. Like, I'm sorry. You don't make the playoffs if you're -27. Washington Capitals are -27, and there they are. Now, to your previous point, you know, Detroit has surrendered this thing. The Islanders have surrendered this thing. I mean, Buffalo is still trying to claw back into this thing. They had a huge game against Vancouver tonight. All of a sudden, you know, this Pittsburgh-New Jersey game tonight is suddenly huge, because, you know, everyone nibbling around the edges here is looking at a couple of teams. Whoever has the second wild card, and the point that you just made, the Philadelphia Flyers third in the Metropolitan Division and being chased by the Washington Capitals right now, who are a scant 1 point behind them. So if you are the Islanders, or if you are the Penguins or the New Jersey Devils, maybe your eye's not necessarily on that second wild card. It's on the Philadelphia Flyers. And now, for the first time this season, they are feeling a pinch. And that's why, to your previous point, I think we might be seeing a let's start paying attention here, gentlemen.
Panic.
Scratch of Sean Couturier.
Panic move. Yeah, for sure. I think the Devils and Penguins have been lasered in on the Flyers for a while. Maybe the Devils since the Stadium Series game, at the very least, as far as that being maybe the easier spot to get than the other. In the Capitals' defense, like, they've been better since the start of the month. I think they're around 12th in 5-on-5 defense, around 17th in offense. So their numbers have crept up from their season averages since the turn of the calendar. The really interesting thing about this team, in my opinion, besides the idea that on March 19th, 2024, Alex Ovechkin has a better percentage chance of making the playoffs than Sidney Crosby. Didn't see that one coming.
Yep.
The really interesting thing for me is what Brian McClellan decided to do with this team, and that it worked. I remember a year before this trade deadline, so last year, to put it in more direct terms instead of this weird riddle speak that I just used on radio. Last 2 years ago at the trade deadline, come on, I got a newborn. Give me a break. He re-signed a bunch of guys. Remember going to Cap Friendly 2 years ago, and it was like the Red Sea.
Oh yeah,
like the Capitals had all of these UFAs ready to go, and then he, you know, McClellan re-signs Jensen and re-signs Van Riemsdyk and re-signs all these guys and makes little moves like the Sandin deal. Yeah, and kind of like
whole blue line.
Does. Yeah, he doesn't throw his cards back in the middle of the table. He kind of keeps playing the hand he was dealt. And you're like, dude, read the room. Trade some of these guys. Get some picks. Start the rebuild. Start the retool. And he didn't. And it was kind of that edict that Ted Leonsis talked to me about a couple years ago with regard to Ovechkin. The idea that Ovi signed that contract not only to like finish his career as a Capital, but under the auspices of they're going to build around me. We're not going to be in a rebuild. We're going to be competitive. And so when they did that, I'm like, they're overcompensating for what Ovechkin wants. But at the end of the day, and granted, like we just talked about, there's a lot of circumstances for why this is happening. At the end of the day, on March 19th, Alex Ovechkin is playing meaningful playoff chase games. His team is in a playoff seed. And I did not think that would be the case when the Caps doubled down on what was already on their roster.
It's interesting, too. You know, last year around trade deadline, this was a Washington Capitals in slight retreat. And we all looked at that and said, okay, you know what? That's just because, you know, John Carlson is out. That injury is devastated. That blue line has devastated that team. They're not the same without their number one dog, and that's really obvious. Maybe we should consider him for the Hart Trophy, because without John Carlson, this team is floundering. And then this year, we started the season off with the Nick Backstrom news. And ever since then, it's sort of deteriorated. And we've wondered about the Wayne Gretzky chase. And we've wondered, like, at times, I mean, we all had the conversation, you know, looks like the goals have dried up for Ovechkin. Looks like the game has dried up for Ovechkin. He's not the same guy. There's not the same impact. You know, he used to do something every single game, whether it was a huge hit or a highlight reel, power play, one-timer from his usual. He would do something. And it just wasn't there. It just seemed that there were a lot of games where Ovechkin was going through the motions. And then when that conversation hit a fevered pitch, all of a sudden, Ovi turned into Ovi again. And now the race is back on. And there's 51 goals separating Ovechkin and Wayne Gretzky. But then, like, to your point, you know, Brian McClellan, a cozy, what, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, on that Saturday afternoon press conference said, "Now we're done. We're throwing in the towels. It's all about the kids. It's not there for us this year." And it's like everybody on that Capitals team went, "Huh?" Like old Scooby-Doo cartoon, huh?
What?
Right? What do you mean? Well, Mike Scooby? Like, Mike Shaggy?
All these years, I thought I was the impressions guy. Look at you.
I got one. That's it. That's all that I do. I can't compete with your Bobby Holik. I can't compete with any of them. None of them. And it's bizarre. Like, honestly, I don't think it's going to last between the combination of, you know, how they're actually playing, the amount of luck involved here, to say nothing of the schedule and all these teams chasing. If they make it in, hallelujah. I'm just enjoying the story right now. Like, I'm just enjoying watching the Washington Capitals be a team that we didn't expect them to be after Brian McClellan, the general manager, said, "Yeah, there's no there for us anymore. We're going to look to reload this thing." And then all of a sudden, we wake up this morning, the Washington Capitals are in a playoff spot.
Well,
it is with a dash 27 goal diff. It's wild. The whole thing's wild to me.
The thing that we're not talking about, though, is that, like, there's a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde with the Capitals. The Jekyll is when Darcy Kemper is between the pipes, or that's the Hyde. And yeah, the Jekyll is when Charlie Lindgren was there. Lindgren in his last six starts has given up 3 goals once. Okay, he's got a shutout, a 39-save shutout, yep, against the Penguins. He's on a heater right now, including 3 straight wins on their road trip. You know, they've got a hot hand, and they'll probably ride him real hard for the next couple of weeks. And he's played well enough all season long to be the guy to get them over the hump. So a lot of these numbers that you and I have been talking about, like their goals against per 60 and their goal differential in the standings, things like that, a lot of that is the product of not the goaltender, who is currently, I think at last count, almost 15 goals saved above expected this season. Lindgren's been awesome. Yeah. And sometimes that's just going to be enough when, again, you combine it with the teams in front of them stumbling and the teams in back of them with sputtering motors that can't get going.
Okay, I want to get to a couple more things here, but one final thought on Charlie Lindgren. And I'm not sure if I had this conversation to you or mentioned this to you, but the most profound conversation I had this year so far with anyone in hockey was about, I don't know, a couple of months ago when I was having a conversation with someone from a team and we were talking about the MVP and the Hart Trophy race and who's most valuable versus most points. And this is the usual BS conversation you have with people around the Hart Trophy. And this person said to me, "You know who the real Hart Trophy winner is?" I said, "Who's that?" He says, "Whichever team has a $1 million goaltender that can get wins. That is the MVP." So whether it's, your point, Charlie Lindgren or Anthony Stolarz or Alex Lyon, that is the MVP. That is the most valuable thing a team can have, the $1 million goaltender that can get you wins. And to your point, Lindgren is getting those wins. Now, the other team we should talk about that we saw last night are the Buffalo Sabres. And they find themselves in an interesting, as Jimmy Stewart once says, a very interesting situation. There's my second impression of the day from It's a Wonderful Life. Right. They beat Seattle 6-2. Thanks, man. I had an extra cup of coffee this morning. I'm fully caffeinated and I'm ready to go. 6-2, Skinner with the hat trick there. All of a sudden, there's more life in Buffalo. And I wonder now what happens with the goaltending. So Luukkonen has been, as you just mentioned, how good Lindgren's been. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has been fantastic. Maybe the best goalie since the calendar flipped. And all of a sudden, they've called up Devon Levi for this road trip, and it's a back-to-back. And you know that Luukkonen would love to play both of these games after the win last night and the game tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. But if that happens, what's the point of calling up Devin Levi? But then if you're playing Devin Levi tonight, what's the message to Eric Comrie and to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen tonight with this Buffalo Sabres team that is looking for a charge? This is one of the issues with the three-goalie system here, where Eric Comrie very much finds himself on the outside looking in. But nonetheless, how do you read the goalie situation with the Buffalo Sabres right now? To me, it's fascinating and maybe even wrought with disaster. How about that?
Well, the message to Eric Comrie is pretty clear, which is that you don't matter. You are 28 years old. Well, Devin Levi is 22 years
remember,
old. We need this guy to play meaningful games. We need him to get battle ready and battle tested because he's going to be a goalie for us in the future. So if we need to spot start him and give Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen a rest, we're going to do it. Eric Comrie's feelings in this matter matter very little, I think, to the Buffalo Sabres.
I just find it so fascinating that he went from the guy they spent $4 million on to even the guy they were scared to waive because someone was going to claim him to the guy that can't play, that they'll call up the American Hockey League goaltender right now, albeit Devin Levi, to play in front of him.
Eric Comrie is going to be forever the cautionary tale of the NHL version of the NFL backup quarterback. Like, the backup quarterback comes in, he plays a bit, a team sees him, they're like, oh my goodness, look at those five games this guy played. We've got to be in the Scott Mitchell business, to use an ancient reference to a Detroit Lions acquisition. Comrie was the guy
You know what he's going to be? He's going to be the cautionary tale for all goaltenders who are told by their general manager, don't worry, we're going to trade a goalie here. It won't be the three-goaltender system, we assure you. Because we saw plenty of that this season. Thank you very much.
He's got an .880 save percentage in 2 years in Buffalo. Like,
I'm not
the reason.
Listen,
he has a job totally in Buffalo is because of 19 good games in Winnipeg. To me, the story of Eric Comrie is the story that the small sample size of a backup goaltender is never going to portend anything except for a small sample size for a backup goaltender.
Someone in Buffalo looked at that and said, that's worth the extra year. Because there are other teams that were out there bidding on him, and everyone was offering one-year contracts. There was someone, I have no idea who it is, in the Sabres organization that said, I'm going to stick my neck out and say, we need to sign him for two.
Yeah, it's called, we're the Buffalo Sabres, and we have to overcompensate for being the Buffalo Sabres, and that's how we sign guys. Like, that's the
fair.
It's not exactly the mystery of the
All
Sphinx
right.
there, why they gave Eric Comrie an extra year.
All
and nobody
right,
else
okay,
would.
Fine. Fine, here we go. Move along. Nothing to see.
Do you think
here.
They're a playoff team? So the Sabres, as we talk about them right now, actually have a better percentage chance of making the playoffs than do the Devils and the Penguins in the Eastern Conference. It's only 8.2%, but it's a higher percentage nonetheless.
I can't help but thinking, and maybe I'm just like way off on this, I can't help but thinking that the Detroit Red Wings are gonna turn things around here. And I don't know what I'm basing it on other than this is just how I feel. Like, that's it. I just can't believe that they have been this bad. Like, when they beat the Buffalo Sabres 4-1, ended the 7-game losing streak on the weekend, I said to myself, okay, aha, now they finally turn things around. They turn around the next night and get doubled up by the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-3. Oops. So I can't help but think, because it feels like Detroit's out of this. And they're not.
They're not.
They're not at all.
Nobody is.
They're not out of this. Like, Detroit. No, Islanders are. I mean, listen, Islanders themselves are a dash 22. We just complained about dash 27 for the Washington Capitals. Here's the Islanders at dash 20. They have the weirdest looking record in the NHL at 29-23-15. Regulation wins 21. So you better win in clean because you ain't getting the tiebreaker, Patrick Waugh and company. And that's why I can't help but thinking that maybe at the end of all of this, it's just the Detroit Red Wings that make it in, and we finally see some playoff games at the not-so-shiny new rink.
The entire bubble plus the Flyers, I'll leave the Lightning out of this because they look pretty good, but the Flyers and the second wild card, it's as if the entire Eastern Conference is the NCAA March Madness play-in games. They're just like teams that may not necessarily belong, but we're going to expand it to let them in. And it's just like, listen, I'm a playoff expansion guy,
okay.
But I look at this laundry list of teams that are right now, you know, limping and vomiting all over themselves as they try to get to the second wild card. I'm just like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we shouldn't expand the playoffs.
This is a moment where Gary Bettman says, see, I keep telling you, this is why
I know,
we don't
I hate
need
it.
Expanded playoffs.
No, but
But this is his point.
Mr. Bettman, in my defense, I give you the Western Conference, where we have a lot of teams that probably deserve to be in the playoffs.
Yes.
That are better than the ones.
One of them might be the St. Louis Blues. Now, let me ask you about the Nashville Predators. So I looked something up. This was a fascinating. I found a website today called bookingentertainment.com.
All right.
Okay. And it's pretty fascinating. And it's a third-party booking agency that will book you for, you know, for weddings and parties and these types of things, corporate events. They'll book rock bands and other performers, I would imagine, as well. Because I did a search on, just on a lark, how much would it cost to rent U2? Like, if you wanted to rent the band, and I found it. And the price is, it says $1 million plus to rent U2. Availability, genre, adult alternative, classic rock, indie rock, and a list of their hit singles. And it says price $1 million plus to rent U2. Now, we've talked a lot about the Nashville Predators and the U2 trip that was canceled by Andrew Burnett after the 9-2 spanking at the hands of the Dallas Stars, and that helped turn the season around and reminded them why they were there. Do you think if Nashville does anything, that the organization would rent U2 for them to make up for the trip?
If they win the cup, there's a cardboard cutout of Bono in the locker room, and every time they win a game, they pull a little shred of clothing off of Bono. Is that what you're thinking of? Just like the movie Major League?
Something like that, yeah. This is our prize, boys. We get our name on the cup, and we get a U2 concert.
I got to tell you, that
when
that
we were
plus,
supposed to get.
That plus on the $1 million price tag for U2 is doing a lot of work. I mean, like, when I think of you renting U2, I think of, like, the son of a sheikh in Dubai, his birthday party or something. Like, that's the kind of gig that I think the $1 million plus for. But at the very least, listen, I don't know what the current status is for in-arena entertainment in Nashville, but like, if they win a playoff round, don't you think the goal song should be like Vertigo or something? Like, shouldn't they flip the switch to the U2 song,
well,
to kind of lean into the meme?
Vancouver's got where the streets have no name. So that's kind of the domain of the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, we would want to violate the sacred domain of the Vancouver Canucks. Can I dare put a whale on my jersey, Merrick? Will they be upset with me?
You know what I'm saying, though. Like, they kind of, you know, Montreal's got Coldplay with Fix You, and Vancouver's, so, and, you know, Toronto has Hall & Oates, so you might want to think about something else there.
I don't know what their current goal. I was just trying to look at it. I know they had I Like It, I Love It by Tim McGraw for a long time. They had Gold on the Ceiling, I think, for a while. I don't know what the Predators have as their goal song these days. I feel bad for not knowing it.
Nor do I. You can get David Lee Roth for $200,000. This is a fascinating website.
Wait, he pays you?
Has he fallen that far? Has it really come to that?
I'm just saying.
Oh boy,
it's 2024, man.
Okay, what do you make of Nashville right now? They're the underreported team.
They seriously are. I first of all like them because I can, you know, strain my arm patting myself on the back for saying that they were going to be a playoff team this year. I really believed it. Like, I thought the Trotz.
You did,
Brunette,
eh? Not
I
me.
Did. I picked them for the playoffs. The Trotz Brunette, good vibes.
Good for you.
Solid young team. I thought Bruno was going to be the guy to kind of like activate their offense, and he has to a certain extent. But, you know, overall, it's just a really well put together, balanced roster between impactful veterans, good young players, and then eventually getting, you know, the goaltending to turn around, because obviously Saros had a bit of a roller coaster season. But I mean, like, again, like, the Gustav Nyquist acquisition and has worked out well. Novak continues to mature as a scorer. Like, there's Evangelista has had a pretty good season. Like, there's a ton of guys that have played really well, and they've punched above their weight a little bit overall. But, you know, this is why when the Lindy Ruff thing imploded in New Jersey, most of the reaction was, damn, if only we could have kept the other guy. Like, because Brunette's figured out a thing or two about being a head coach in this league, and I think he's really gotten maximum effort from this roster, and sometimes it's because he has deprived them of joy to get their attention.
Well, we saw what he did with the Florida Panthers under very strange circumstances, and you see what he's and he was a coach of the year nominee that year, and you see what he's doing now with the Nashville Predators. A couple of things have become pretty obvious in the last little while. One is that the NHL is going to grow again soon, and two, it's going to be Salt Lake City and Atlanta at the minimum. How do you feel about both, knowing that Salt Lake City may end up a relocation market? We'll see how Arizona goes here. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have something in Utah and we're going to have something in Georgia. That's become pretty clear.
I've talked about this with Salt Lake City before, and it got me in trouble with some local Salt Lake City media, which I don't really care. But I feel like demographically it's a redundancy, to be honest with you. I think the team will thrive. Obviously, Ryan Smith is somebody who's very passionate about having an NHL team in that building. There's going to be a new building for that location. Like, everything is pointing to be a very successful place for an NHL team. It's a winter sports city. I think it'll do fine. But when you think about the NHL going to different places, exciting places like Vegas, for example, to grow the game mm-hmm. demographically, then Atlanta and Houston both do more work to that end of expanding the league's footprint than maybe a doubling down in a place that might already have an affinity for the sport. That's my gripe with
Salt
Lake City.
Can I pause on Salt Lake?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Can I pause on one thing and add to it? Like, I've thought about this a lot going back to last year when we spoke to him on our podcast, and that is, I think the NHL is very interested in Salt Lake City. I understand your points. I also think they're very interested in Ryan Smith.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I look at this and I say, yes, it is a new market in the NHL, and that's exciting and interesting for the National Hockey League. But I almost think that Salt Lake City itself is irrelevant. If it were Houston or Milwaukee or Kansas City, whatever, as long as it was Ryan Smith making the bid, that's really attractive to the NHL. Like, I look at this and I say, this is the NHL saying, that's the kind of person we want in this league. Does that make sense to you? Because that's how I strongly feel about this.
It does. And look no further than the things that they've done after the collapse of the regional sports network situation in the U.S. and how they've handled it, how they've brought an incredible amount of subscribers to the Utah Jazz's subscription platform. Like, he's a really forward-thinking guy. Yeah. That team has done some really interesting things in its own market. And you're right, to add him to the brain trust, I think would behoove the league in a lot of ways. And I'm sure he might be even the most attractive thing about that bid. The problem with Houston, which might be the best market for the NHL to go to, is that I don't think Tillman Fertitta really wants to own a team. And also the arena situation there with them having to be a tenant in somebody else's building is not really what they want necessarily for that market. And then the Atlanta one, again, like I'll acquiesce to everybody from the people on the ground there to Bill Daly telling me that the economic and population situation there has shifted so dramatically in the last dozen years that it'll be a different deal than when we had the Thrashers there. If they put the arena wherever they're talking about it outside of Atlanta, either in Forsyth or in Alpharetta, like I'll buy what you're selling me because I don't know any different. But obviously, like, from a television market standpoint, it's definitely a place they want to be. From a geographic standpoint, it's definitely where they want to be. The problem for me about the entire idea of NHL expansion, Merrick, is that we have a very nice, tidy, divisible number right now. And to get back to that, we'd have to add 4 teams. And I don't... Oh, and by the way... I'm not one of these people that is worried about the watering down of the talent. Guess what? We've had watered down talent. Guess what it led to? The best offensive season in the NHL since the early 1990s. If that's the end effect of having watered down talent in this league, bring it on. Like, the NHL's in a boom time right now because of goal scoring. And if expansion played a hand in that, then add 50 teams. Seriously.
What? Listen. What did we see after the league doubled in 67 and then the WHA and more expansion in 70 and 72 and 74? We saw an explosion of offense.
Yeah.
And we saw a button-down NHL turn into a rock and roll WHA. And then that translated into a European WHA, and that translated into something really cool for the NHL when they absorbed four teams. Here endeth the history lesson. One thing that I want to mention about Atlanta. Here's because I've heard the same thing that you have, and you know I heard what Bill Daly has said about it, and all the locals and the interested parties, and all this about you know how the population has changed from the Atlanta Flames days and the Thrashers days to where it's at now, and that's all fine and good. That's all fine and good, but there's one thing that's significantly changed, which will have the biggest effect on Atlanta as an expansion market. And that is the expansion draft rules.
Right.
That is the biggest thing because they will not have to go through what the Atlanta Thrashers went through. They will not have to go through paying dues for 5 to 10 years until you can ice a semi-decent team that might, like the Thrashers did once, scratch its way into the playoffs only to be swept by the New York Rangers. They're given a shot at it. That to me is the big one. I understand all about, you know, how the population has grown and demographic this and that. The expansion rules. That's the big change. See Vegas, see Seattle, now see Atlanta, see Salt Lake City.
Unless your franchise is just haplessly and irresponsibly mismanaged, there should not be another NHL expansion team that goes its first six seasons without a playoffs berth like the Thrashers did.
Yep.
Like it's almost an impossibility given how loaded your roster is going to be when you enter the league. So you're right. Yeah, that's a huge advantage. I don't know. I'm intrigued by the idea that unlike the other potential spots, you have two very, very different competing interests trying to build arenas in that state. And I know obviously like, you know, Anson Carter's got a real foothold in the NHL and you know, Bettman's fond of him and everything like that. But the other bit is quite solid too. And is being very aggressive in letting everyone know how solid it is. So I'm intrigued to see who wins out. It kind of reminds me of the beginning of the Seattle process when we had a bunch of different bidders. Ultimately, there was only one that really kind of shook out in the end. So I'm intrigued to see which one of these competing bids does win out if we have expansion to Atlanta.
We'll see. I just wonder if at the end of all of this, because he's such a major figure wherever he goes. And I loved him when he was with the Thrashers, and I love him now that he's with the PWHL. Please, let's have Stan Kasten somehow involved in all of this.
Why not, right?
Can we please? No, whatever bit is successful, somehow attach Stan Kasten to the entire thing.
The bottom line for me in the Atlanta bid, the big winner, of course, is Canada. We'll get another franchise within the span of 7 to 10 years.
Yes.
Good news for Saskatoon.
Yes,
good news for a second Toronto team. Good news for Quebec City. Just if you're in Canada, if you can hear my voice right now, clasp your hands together and pray that Atlanta wins an expansion bid because make it eight. Are we up to eight? Would that be eight, Merrick? Do we have seven right now in Canada? We'll make it eight.
How many do we have right now in Canada?
Okay, make it eight.
You do not know how many franchises there are in Canada. We need to go through it. One in British Columbia, two in Alberta, one in Manitoba, two in Ontario, one in Quebec.
The Maritime Province is saying,
where's ours? So you're looking at Saskatoon and all these. What about Halifax?
The only time I pay attention to how many Canadian teams there are is when I look at the playoff seeds. And right now I'm feeling quite uncomfortable about how many Canadian teams there could be in the postseason. So that's my problem right now. It's been an amazing run since 93. I'd like to keep the streak going. But there's a spot of trouble right now for me as I look at how many Canadian teams could be in the playoffs this year.
Last time two Canadian teams competed for the Stanley Cup was?
Edmonton-Calgary?
89.
I mean, not Edmonton-Calgary. Sorry, Montreal-Calgary. Jesus. Right. Edmonton-Calgary can't play for the Stanley Cup.
That's okay.
Yeah. Montreal-Calgary, I meant. Yeah.
1989. Oof. Okay, quickly, what's the game of the night for you tonight? Pittsburgh, New Jersey, Winnipeg, New York. Carolina, New York Islanders, Colorado, St. Louis is all of a sudden spicy, or Buffalo, Vancouver. I guess throw Tampa and Vegas in there. That's a neat one.
It's the Islanders in Carolina because I'm going to be there. And I got to see what's going on with these Islanders in person. I haven't seen them in person in a while. I'm also intrigued to see. The Hurricanes now not only have acquired two guys in Kuznetsov and Gensel that are going to help them immeasurably in playoff scoring, which is, as we've talked about before, their Achilles heel. But yeah. Like the Evgeny Kuznetsov good vibes tour was something I didn't anticipate.
Oh, and when he's got
his act together, when he's locked in, I mean, he is a ray of sunshine and can be. And I think that he is fit in nicely there. And, you know, the Hurricanes are definitely one of those teams that could easily level up to be on that top tier of cup contenders. And hopefully this could be the year for them. I mean, they've been bubbling under the surface for so long that you'd love to see them finally at least break through and play for the damn thing.
And again, I keep mentioning the fact that it is a Pittsburgh Penguin and a Washington Capital coming together to make it all happen is just a chef's kiss for a lot of people.
That's right.
All right. You be good, Greg Wyshynski. We'll talk in 7 days. Take care, pal.
Take care.